Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on today's episode of The Real. It is Monday, December 3rd, and we're happy to have you here. Going to talk about some movie and TV show news, per usual. We're going to talk about a couple old movies, a couple trailer breakdowns. We have a guest in the studio today. So, without further ado, let's get real. Take five. So if you're wondering what happens in like the 20 seconds that I play the intro music, Jared and Chris dance like really hard.
It is amazing.
Very yeah. Well.
I'm your host, producer. I own this podcast. I'm David Auth.
I don't think that added part was necessary.
All right, let's just go around and,
Co-host, Jared DeLauder.
Co-host, but slightly above Jared, but very slightly below David, Chris Miskey.
And our guest in the studio today is none other than...
Todd Smith. I'm higher above Chris, though.
No, he's not.
Unreal.
It's a close race.
Todd, put that out there. Todd is my roommate's good friend, and he's here today because he read one of the books that's being adapted to a movie, so I thought he would be a good source to come to talk about that. He obviously knows a little bit more than I do. I know nothing about this movie, so when we get to that, he'll be the one that we go to for all the sources and, whatnot. So how's your week, guys? What happened in between, last episode and this one? Anything important that you guys want to...
I cried for a couple days.
Why?
The SpongeBob creator.
We'll talk about that at some point. Yeah, we'll get to that.
But other than that, it was a great week.
Good.
I watched a Ken Burns documentary about the Vietnam War.
Sounds very interesting. I think at some point...
Ken Burns documentaries.
I love Ken Burns.
They're incredible.
I think at some point we should get into documentaries, talk about different documentaries.
I have a great documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite is Blackfin or Blackfish. I forget
Blackfish.
The one about SeaWorld. Really interesting. So let's just jump into it. Chris, do you want to talk about the how do you pronounce this dude's name?
Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl. So we just got announced that a Roald Dahl cinematic universe was coming. So less than a few months after announcing it intended to unspool C.S. Lewis's Narnia universe in full, Netflix has now announced that it will be animating just about every major title in the library of the beloved children's author, Roald Dahl. That includes Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Matilda, the BFG, the Twits, At Long Last, and Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator. That's just some of them. There can be a lot more.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Chris, do you want to go on your spiel about
Fantastic? Top five movie ever.
Okay.
George Clooney is masterful. Bill Murray as the Badger, incredible.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that was his book, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite by Roald Dahl.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie, though. The animation style was very, very interesting, too. Mm-hmm.
Wes Anderson film?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, that's pretty characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of weird stuff, like Grand Budapest Hotel is kind of like that weird style as well. Not animated, but weird style.
Different, yeah. So they're calling it a first-of-its-kind event. Not really first of its kind, because cinematic universes are just an enormous thing nowadays. The effort will not only adapt Dahl's myriad tales, but also build on an imaginative story universe that expands far beyond the pages of the books themselves. And this is what Netflix is calling a fresh contemporary, way to do it. This kind of just came out of left field for me. Really the only Dahl story that I know is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I didn't know he had so many books under his belt that are that popular, but yeah. What are you guys' thoughts on that growing popularity of cinematic universes? I mean, obviously it started with Marvel and all those superhero TV shows and movies, but it's becoming a lot more common of a thing now.
I think that's definitely the Marvel has definitely help that all kick off, obviously. Yeah. But I don't know. I think Roald Dahl is one of those authors that doesn't really get a ton of appreciation on the grand scheme of things. Everybody just is drawn to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which obviously is a great story. But there's so many other pieces that he's done that are incredible.
I don't think it's a bad idea. The one thing that kind of scares me with those kind of universes is the ability that they milk it for too long. So they'll make multiple films, have them out every single year, and you're going to fatigue the franchise at that point. And it's one of those things that I think Marvel is doing at this point, but it still makes a lot of money. And when there's money to be made, they're always going to do it. So,
yeah, wow, that makes sense, Todd.
Fantastic.
Todd's a very shy person, so I'm glad that you know he's on here.
Can we get a round of applause?
Yeah. Next bit of news is actually kind of about video games, but also you know movies, of course. It's about Call of Duty. Todd's shaking his head. I'll ask him why in a couple seconds. But Activision Blizzard Studios co-president Stacy Scheer and Nick Van Dyke are working with director Stefano Salimo, who directed Sicario 2, on a film adaptation of the world-famous video game series Call of Duty. The company apparently has high hopes for the feature, as it is already preparing for a sequel. Black Panther screenwriter Joe Robert Cole has been called in to work on the second Call of Duty film. And that's what the news was, is that they were working on the sequel. But it's news to me that they were even making a first one. I didn't even know about the first one they're making. I just saw this bit of news about a second one, and I clicked on it, read a little bit more, did my research. I had no clue they were making another one, or making one in general. So
yeah, that was something that really wasn't publicized very much.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Yes,
I completely agree.
Yeah, and I mean, video game movies, historically fail. Can you guys name one that's either been good or done well in the box office? I
was just going to say Resident Evil was an adaptation. It was not good.
Yeah.
Years.
Halo released a couple, and they were awful.
Yeah, I mean...
Wasn't there a Pac-Man movie?
Yeah.
No, not Pixel. I thought there was one that was just Pac-Man. Pixels is absolute garbage. That is maybe the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Maybe a bottom tomato contender.
But I mean, did you guys played the original Call of Duty games, right? You played through the campaigns, and that's what they're basing these movies off of, a little bit at least, is the campaign modes. Do you guys think that those campaign modes are unique and interesting enough where it could possibly be a good movie?
I think a couple of them could be contenders. I think World at War has a very good storyline. It follows a couple different soldiers, obviously. So that's a big draw for that. You can kind of hit a couple different theaters. Call of Duty 3 also had a solid campaign. That's my personal favorite for those playing at home. But I'm personally off the Call of Duty train after I bought World War II because I love the history behind it, and it disappointed
me
so
big
hard.
History buff.
Yeah, some may call me history major.
Yeah, he is majoring in history, so
hit me.
Yeah. Moving on now, going back to Star Wars, seems like this franchise is in the news pretty much every single day now. So there's a new animated short series coming to YouTube using original sounds and dialogue from the original three films. James Waugh, Vice President of Franchise Content and Strategy at Lucasfilm, told StarWars.com, "Over the years, I've had so many of my friends who are all parents tell me how much they wanted to introduce their kids to the Star Wars, but didn't feel that their kids were quite ready for the movies yet. They wanted a way to celebrate the universe that they love." The show will hopefully do that by using accessible animation and a very familiar outlet to set up kids not just to see current movies, but for a little something coming next year. Obviously, that's Episode 9. Do you guys watch either the trailer for this new animated short or any of the episodes?
I haven't watched the trailer or anything for it. I just know that I remember watching the Clone Wars,
mm-hmm.
and that was a very good outlet to be entered into the Star Wars universe.
So this actually came out November 30th, so I didn't know it was out yet. And they're only a couple minute long. They're just scenes from the original three movies. And they use, like I said before, the sounds and dialogue from the original movies. But obviously it's not a shot-for-shot remake. It's this new animation style that, hasn't been seen in the Star Wars universe before. So it actually kind of surprised me. I watched a couple of them, and they're pretty interesting. I mean, obviously the animation style is very, kiddie. You can tell that it's made for children. But I think their angle with that makes sense, at least. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. Moving on now to Spider-Man. This one is actually really, really good news if you're a Spider-Man fan. So according to The Hollywood Reporter, Sony has announced a Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse sequel, as well as a spinoff featuring an all-female cast. Joaquin Dos Santos, known for his work on Justice League Unlimited, Avatar The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra, is being tapped to direct the sequel to Into the Spider-Verse. And Lauren Montgomery, who also worked on the two Avatar series, as well as Voltron, Green Lantern, First Flight, Superman / Batman Apocalypse, and, you know, a whole slew of other animated movies, is reportedly in negotiations right now to lead the charge for an untitled project that will, quote, gather the female heroes in the Spider-Man universe of characters in one adventure. So the second half about, like, the all-female spinoff was kind of surprising. But, you know, when you, like, the movie hasn't even been released yet, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse hasn't even been released yet, and they're already getting a sequel to it. So, I mean, even just from the trailers, that movie looks like it's going to be really good, but, like, this is very, very promising news if you're a fan. So, this is one that I'm definitely seeing, you know, opening night. So, moving on now to the DC Universe side of superhero films. This is kind of about, you know, a lesser-known character. His name's Blue Beetle. Warner Brothers' ambitious slate of DC Comics films is growing, with work underway on a Blue Beetle movie. The character's alter ego, or, like, actual name, is Jaime Reyes. That's the version of the character that's going to be in the movie. According to a new report from The Wrap, writer Gareth Dunnett is working on the script for the new movie, while Zev Foreman will serve as executive producer for Warner Brothers. This will be one of the first standalone superhero movies to also feature a Latino character in the lead, which is interesting. You always love to see superhero movies kind of breaking the mold, at least in terms of, like, the background of their characters. And, you know, you haven't seen a Latino superhero at least, like, be the lead character. So it's pretty interesting. I love that superhero, Blue Beetle. I don't know if you guys know anything about him.
Very vaguely.
Yeah.
But
he's pretty interesting. Todd, you have a smirk on your face. What are you laughing at, dude?
Oh, no.
No?
Nope.
All right, dude. And then in that same universe, Aquaman is set to release on September, or December 19th, actually. So that's another one that I'm really, really excited for. Probably going to see it opening night. Chris, you want to do this next one, since I know you read up on the one Pinocchio article?
Yeah, so Tom Hanks is in early talks to play Geppetto, which I think everybody knows is Pinocchio's father.
Yeah.
In Disney's live-action adaptation of the animated tale. So Paddington's Paul King, the man who directed the Great Bear, is directing. Andrew Miano and Chris Weitz are producing. King Weitz and Simon Farnaby, they wrote the most recent draft of it, so... I don't know. This one looks like really interesting, just because obviously everybody knows that the 1940 cartoon.
Yeah.
It's like very, like, fun loving. Pinocchio's nose grows, and that's pretty much the entire plot of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they said that this one's going to be, like, really, like, dark and twisted. Or yeah. Is that the Netflix?
This is, like, politically.
Yeah, driven. It's supposed to be, like, politically charged. So I saw, we were reading that article that we found, and, they said that it's going to take... I mean, obviously, Pinocchio, like the actual story, takes place in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 1940 cartoon, so that's coinciding with the rise of fascism and Mussolini.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to really do with Mussolini. If they're going to, like, incorporate him as, like, a character. I have no clue, but it's definitely an interesting time in Italian history, and I think that's something that hasn't really been weighed upon for it, so it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, personally, I don't know if this is a movie that needed a live-action remake.
This might be the one that kind of, like, topples the live-action, like, chain.
Yeah.
Like, on making these live-action.
But then again, it has Tom Hanks in it, so, like...
I think that might be the only thing that can salvage it.
Yeah.
Because it definitely does not deserve a live-action remake.
I think with the live-action stuff, what they're more trying to do is trying to open it up to a broader audience. So, like, the younger generations is more of a stuff that we would have watched when we were younger. So kids nowadays, they might not watch it as much, whereas they wouldn't watch, like, a Frozen or something like that. But now that you have a live-action version of Pinocchio, The Lion King coming out, and all of that other stuff, it really just opens up a huge door for, you know, a lot of younger generation kids out there.
Yeah, but, like, So, like, I definitely understand, like, that token. But, like, I know specifically with, like, the Jungle Book, they made it more based off of the Rudyard Kipling story, mm-hmm. which is very dark. Yeah. It's a children's book still, but it is extremely dark. Like, there is a lot of death. And they made that into the live-action remake. It was very more tuned into that. Because it was really made to be, like, an environmental statement, like a metaphor for humans taking down the rainforest, whatever. But they made it a lot more dark than the original. Because I know I love the original cartoon. So I don't know. It's kind of conflicting because at one token, they're trying to remake these so the new generation of children can enjoy all these movies. But in the same token, they're making them very dark for the adult audience who knows them
yeah.
to be able to watch them and enjoy them. So it's kind of odd.
Yeah. We never discussed the Dumbo trailer.
Right.
I don't know how we missed that, but any thoughts on that one? I feel like that one is probably more wanted than the Pinocchio one, but like it's also like to me it seems like that isn't really one that like that large of an audience was like begging for, you know? I mean, the trailer definitely looked you know, like intriguing, I guess. I think it'll probably end up being an interesting movie. Tim Burton's the director, so like I mean, it's a Tim Burton, like, that's his own kind of genre at this point. Tim Burton, like you say, Tim Burton, like, his name being associated with a movie, like, you already kind of have your expectations on, like, what that movie's going to be.
The Tim Burton Batman films.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what is coming in the movie when he is, you know, the director.
I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan, but I saw the trailer for this, and I definitely want to see it. I think it looks just different.
Yeah. This one actually, it looks like darker than most of these like live action remakes, which
creepy.
Is like,
yeah. like I mean, that's what he does best. So.
Yeah. I don't like when I first heard that he was the one that was like, you know, writing, directing Dumbo, like I thought it was like an Onion article. I thought it was a joke, to be honest, because those are just two things I never would have associated in my own mind, at least. So that's going to be something I want to keep my eye on, you know, as more from that comes out. Any final thoughts on Disney or Pinocchio before we move on here?
No, I think we pretty much hit it all.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is going to kill it.
Yeah. We should just do an entire Tom Hanks episode one day because I feel like
I would love it.
Yeah. There's so much like Tom Hanks that you could talk about.
Toy Story 4 is coming out too.
Yeah. I mean, truly incredible. I love Tom Hanks. He's good in like pretty much every role. I mean,
Castaway was spectacular.
Yeah, exactly. Name me a bad Tom Hanks movie.
You can't.
Exactly. You can't. Jumping ahead now. What?
No, I'm just going to look up Tom Hanks movies, and by the end of the show, I'll find a bad one.
Okay, please don't. Moving on now to Daredevil. And this is why I played the Daredevil like main theme earlier on in the episode, and it's because Daredevil got canceled. Did you guys, my other co-host, you guys watch Daredevil?
I did not.
No?
I watched the first season, so.
I have not either.
What? Oh, my God. Guys, you got to get on the show, please.
I'm letting you down.
Oh, I'm sad. So I'm going to read the statement here from Netflix, what they put out. They said, Marvel's Daredevil will not return for a fourth season. We are tremendously proud of this show's last and final season, and although it's painful for the fans, we feel it is best to close this chapter on a high note. We're thankful to showrunner Eric Olson and the show's writers, stellar crew, and incredible cast, including Charlie Cox as Daredevil himself, and we're grateful to the fans who have supported the show over the years. While the series on Netflix has ended, the three existing seasons will remain on the service for several years to come, while the Daredevil character will live on in future projects from Marvel. And that's the part that I kind of wanted to discuss with you guys, you know, but you haven't seen Daredevil, so.
I mean, I did see something that people thought that it was going to be on the Disney streaming service.
Yeah.
But it seems that there was a tweet out by one of the Disney people that said that they are not going to put it on there just because of the mature content. And if they do, it's going to be rewritten, you know, they'll recast it and everything like that. So.
Yeah. And that's what, like, originally I thought, too, because, like, when they canceled Luke Cage and then they canceled Iron Fist, can't remember which one was first, but they were, like, a couple days apart, so it doesn't really matter. So they canceled those, and I was like, okay, I mean, those shows weren't really that good. Not many people watched them, so, like, I understand them being canceled. And then they canceled Daredevil, which to me just doesn't make sense at all because that's, like, the pillar that that entire universe was like funded, like founded upon. It's the easily their best in that universe, and in my opinion, one of the best like Marvel or Netflix like original shows. So it didn't make sense to me, and that's why I thought, you know, Disney has a streaming service coming out the next year, so maybe they'll put it on there. Maybe they'll be putting, you know, Luke Cage and Iron Fist on there too. But I don't really know. And like Todd mentioned, they're going to have to like recast and rewrite everything. Something with the contracts that Marvel has. I didn't like really understand it fully. But if they were to put Daredevil on the Disney streaming service, I'd prefer them, honestly, to not do it if they were going to have to like recast and rewrite the whole thing and like start from scratch, which really sucked because all the actors in those roles and like the storylines that they've kind of moved through already like are really solid, and it would just suck to see them all like, you know, start over and have to.
I think that would really kill the show too, because the viewers that have already seen the original one, they already have an expectation in their mind of how the show is going to work, how the characters mesh together, and then if it doesn't live up to their expectation, they're just going to be disappointed and throw it away.
Yeah, and this whole statement, you know, at the very end where they say the Daredevil character will live on in future projects from Marvel, that could literally mean anything from him getting his own TV show, him going back to Netflix, him going on the Disney streaming service, or literally just something like him having his own comic, which he already does. I feel like, honestly, that's what it could mean, which is kind of like the lamest option because everyone wants to watch TV shows instead of reading comics. Makes sense, though. But I was really upset when I heard that news, and I'm really hoping that we'll get to see Charlie Cox again, you know, in that role sometime. So, yeah. Oh, Todd, what is this? Why do you highlight your name at the bottom?
No, that was Chris.
Yeah, I did that.
So moving on now to some other good news. That kind of made me sad. I love that show, man. We're going to be talking about Captain Marvel and Avengers 4. So for Captain Marvel, this movie is set to release on March 4th of 2019. They're going to be releasing a trailer tonight during Monday Night Football. The news was released by the official Marvel Twitter account, along with a new poster for the movie. Do you guys know who's playing Monday Night Football tonight?
It's the R-Words and the Boys.
Yeah, the Cowboys. So
it's Eagles.
I have this theory now.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's the Eagles. I don't know why I said the Boys.
This theory now. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Movie trailers get released a lot of the time, like during football games. Whether, you know, the Lion King trailer got released during Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving Day.
I forget what the game was. It was the Redskins and then someone else.
It was the Cowboys.
Yeah, so that's another, like, boring matchup. So I think, like, the NFL has a deal with a lot of these, like, movie companies now where, like, if the NFL knows that a game is going to suck, then they were like, hey, can you release a trailer, like, during halftime so people will watch?
I mean, no.
Does that make sense to
absolutely, sense. Absolutely what they're doing, yeah. Because a lot of Tennessee games, you get the trailers coming out.
I know. Like, this game tonight is so boring. And I hate to, like, get too much into sports here, but, like, this theory definitely makes sense, right?
I don't know. Colt McCoy's electric.
Is he? Is he really?
Absolutely unreal.
But, yeah. Talent. So that trailer's coming out tonight. And that's the second one, the second trailer so far. So there's going to be a lot of new footage in it. We'll probably talk about it next week. I assume most of you guys listening are listening, you know, after the trailer has been released. So kind of weird broadcasting to you from the past, not knowing about it. So shut up, please.
It's not necessary.
unless for whatever reason you're listening to this in between the hour when the podcast gets released and, you know, the trailer gets released. So, yeah, let us know how it is in the past. We'll talk about it. And then also, the new trailer for Avengers 4 is going to be released during Good Morning America on Wednesday morning. That movie is slated to release on May 3rd of 2019. So next Monday, we'll be talking about Captain Marvel trailer and Avengers 4 trailer. And this is the first like bit of news about that movie like at all. They've been speculating when the trailer's coming out pretty much since the last Avengers movie came out. There's been no posters, you know, nothing about it at all, so it'll be pretty interesting to see that when it comes out on a Wednesday. Moving on now, we're going to be doing a little, this is why Todd's here to talk. Todd's going to be talking about Artemis Fowl. Artemis Fowl is a book that came out over 10 years ago now?
I want to say it was 2001.
Okay, like around early 2000s. And so a trailer was released this past week for the Disney movie. It's based on a series of books written by Eoin Colfer. The movie is being directed by Kenneth Branagh. I don't know how to pronounce it. But I'm just going to get my thoughts out there before. So I haven't read these books, like I said earlier, but like the trailer actually looked kind of interesting. I mean, Jared, Chris, I assume you guys watched it as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not knowing anything about the books, but like it looked very like cinematically pleasing, mm-hmm. I guess is the way I want to put it. The trailer, like, it was kind of fun to watch. They didn't reveal too much in it, but yeah. Todd, you want to take it away here, buddy?
Oh, sure. I mean, things that I really liked with the trailer is with novels, you just have to visualize a lot of the places that, you know, the characters take you.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the mansion that they used for it. It was like something that is a huge part of the book, and I thought that the way that they chose that mansion is a very, very good choice, because that is what I visualized when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like they did a lot of research in terms of where they're going to have the, you know, different settings in the book. The Haven City looks very intriguing. I do think that they did a pretty good job for the only like 2 or 3 seconds that we saw of the underground. I do think that'll be a pretty interesting place to visit throughout it. So those are just a few things. CGI looks, I thought it would look pretty decent.
Yeah.
But as for Disney, I mean, I don't know if they're, it's just not, doesn't have a big enough budget, because, you know, Star Wars and Marvel have huge budgets.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure if they had a little bit less of budget for the CGI, but, you know, it still looks good. So just a few things that, like, I didn't like was, I feel like it's too long. This was supposed to happen multiple years ago. I feel like they could have capitalized way better on it if they would have done it a while ago.
Okay.
Because I was reading, and it looks like apparently it was dated back in 2011 when they started working on this.
Oh, really?
And
wow.
It just went through so many, you know, development cycles, and
yeah.
They started back up in 2016. So that was something that kind of concerns me, because you never know with, especially adaptations
from
novels, you never know how they're going to run. And a few other things, like, there was like certain casting decisions I thought was kind of strange, because in the book, the commander is a male in the books, and they casted a female, and it kind of messes with the arc of Holly, which I thought was kind of strange, because Holly is the first female leprechaun agent in the movie, in the novels, and she like has to go through some adversity to, you know, actually, like, that's her whole character.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an interesting take on it. It'll be pretty cool to see how that plays out, how they move around different type of arcs and stuff. And I think that they did choose a really good Commander Root is played by Judi Dench. If I don't know if any of you guys know who that is.
Yeah.
She played M in
James Bond.
Yeah. And she's nominated for a few Oscars and Primetime Emmys, won a Golden Globe. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think that either way, it's going to make decent money. And again, going back to like Pinocchio, it's going to be like one of those movies that is going to take like a younger generation, expose them to something that, you know, I read in middle school. So I think that's pretty cool.
Okay. So yeah, we'll be talking about that, you know, as more comes out about it. Todd, I want to have you back in, because, you know, you give some good insight, you know, whenever necessary. What do you guys think? Should we have Todd back on?
Let's see. Let's see how this performance rounds out.
Okay.
There's still more to talk about.
There is still more to talk about.
Dad is still young.
So we introduced this segment last week called And the Nominees Are. It's where we just kind of rank, you know, top two, top three, top four, you know, whatever things related to movies or TV shows. And last week we did movies that we're ashamed that we haven't seen. This week we're going to be doing the, you know, best roles played by Will Smith. Because I feel like he's one of those actors where he's just been in so many different roles that are, like, different. You know, like, very, like, contrasting roles, at least. So I think it'll be interesting to talk about. So I'll do one, and then we'll go around and do one, and then do it again. So everyone's going to be given two of their favorite Will Smith roles. So my first one is John Hancock from the movie Hancock. Todd, did I take that from you?
Oh, no,
were you going to do that one?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
I just thought about it.
Yeah, but that's a, I don't even know what year that movie is from. Mid-2000s, maybe? Like a, 2008, it's like a superhero movie. And he plays this John Hancock character. It's based in California. Really interesting movie. It's like a different kind of superhero movie. It's very like based in reality, I guess. But yeah, that's my number one. Todd, what about you?
I can skip me real quick.
Skip you?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll take Jared. Jared is going to talk right now. And, my favorite Will Smith is definitely The Pursuit of Happiness.
Okay.
I really enjoyed his performance, and what made it even better was his child actually in the movie with him.
Yeah.
So the bond they had is something that was real.
Wait, is it Jaden Smith in the movie?
Yeah, Jaden Smith's the kid actor.
Oh, is damn. Okay. I love Jaden Smith, like as a rapper and as an actor.
Yeah,
so
that just really put it over the edge. I'm a big fan.
You're laughing at me, Todd. Jaden Smith is a really good rapper.
Jaden Smith, whenever he held his hair, the one like award ceremony, he like cut his, he had like the big ponytail, and then they cut it off, and he brought it with him the next year. Unreal.
No, have you guys listened to his?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Okay. Is that what you wanted?
Yeah, I didn't want to.
This isn't a music podcast, okay?
Yeah, that's. I told Chris that we should talk about music every so often, and he got upset. I think.
Come on, Chris.
Where's the real?
What are you doing?
I think music is a necessary thing every so often to discuss.
Not unless it's movie scores.
Movie soundtracks.
Movie scores are great.
I mean,
if we're talking Hans Zimmer.
We'll definitely get into that at some point.
We're talking business.
My other option for this like ranking was like movie scores or like theme songs, actually.
I like that.
Seinfeld theme number one.
Yeah. Well, they don't really have a theme. It's more of like a jazz.
A jazz theme.
But it's not like a song. It's just like 10 seconds of, you know.
Are you saying the Office theme is a song?
Yes, sir.
It's like 40 seconds, yeah.
So is the Seinfeld one.
Is it?
It's pretty long.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm wrong then.
Yeah, you are. You are. Can't confirm.
Chris, do you wanna give us your first Will Smith role?
Yeah, so I'm going to choose the self-titled character of Will Smith in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I grew up watching that show, and he's just so funny. Him and Carlton interacting with each other. Then Uncle Phil.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
But like
that's another one that I was hoping someone would mention.
That's one of those shows that I like grew up like absolutely adoring.
Yeah, that's like one of the staple Will Smith roles. Back to me now. So I'm gonna go with Oscar from Shark Tale. What?
That was my second. That was.
Was
my
it?
Second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's 2004 movie. It was kind of like a knockoff Finding Nemo, but he plays a pretty funny character in it. So I hope y'all remember that one. Todd, you want to do two here since we skipped you?
I'd have to say his role, Jay in Men in Black. It's just a classic, you know. It's one of those ones that I've watched multiple times when I was younger. I haven't seen the new one, Men in Black 3, but didn't hear too many good reviews about it.
Yeah, I didn't hear it.
That's one of those franchises that just sort of should have been severed.
After the second one, yeah.
Second one would have been all right, yeah.
Probably say a second one would be iRobot. Pretty good. Pretty good film.
Okay.
Great. Great film.
So I'm going to piggyback off what Todd said, and Men in Black 2 is probably my second favorite Will Smith.
He has so many movies.
Jared was rolling his eyes here because I picked Oscar that he wanted to do, and then Todd picked that one that Jared also wanted to do, so he's cheating here.
Yeah.
You got to come in this.
Scraping
like,
the bottom of the barrel right now.
Like five or six different possible options, you know
there are so many movies.
I didn't watch the movie Bright that he's in, the Netflix special, but from what I've heard, first off, going back to music, the soundtrack's pretty good, and from what I heard, it had glowing reviews, so I think that's one I'm gonna give a shot.
All right, Chris, round it out here for us.
So since Jared didn't give an actual legitimate option, I have two that I'll go through real quick just because they were a quick tie.
That's unfair.
So the first one I have is his role as James West in Wild Wild West, because that movie is so weird. But he wears like those really tiny glasses.
Yeah.
And then like randomly like Ulysses S. Grant is like his co-partner. It's just so odd, but I love that movie. And then the other one that is another great Will Smith film is him playing Alex Hitchens in Hitch. Hitch is so good. I will fight anybody who tells me otherwise.
What is Hitch?
He's he's like a matchmaker.
Okay.
Like the person, like there's like a character that comes to him to try to like set him up with somebody, and then he just they can't like get to her. I don't want to spoil everything, you know. You got to watch it for yourself.
Huh. Okay.
It's really good though. It's funny.
All right, so that was our and the nominees are for this week. I don't know what we want to do next week. I said we might do like theme songs.
Well, it'd be right before Christmas break, so we could do Christmas movies.
Oh, yes.
I'm a sucker for Hallmark movies.
Yes, yes, we'll definitely
do
that.
No one asked.
Yeah. Jared's probably going to cry again.
Yeah.
Oh, what about for this category, like as a category of movies that like make you cry? Right?
Yeah, that would be all
Dunkirk
for me.
Oh my, it's every week.
I think it's five episodes. I've gone five for five talking about Dunkirk.
I think you have.
You sneak it in.
Honestly impressive.
The in-house Dunkirk expert.
Yeah.
Is the title I would like to go by.
And like the okay, here's the last thing that I wanted to briefly discuss here today. I was up in the library earlier today with Jared and his friend Sarah.
Emma.
Okay. I knew it was like a common
girl name.
Just a girl.
Emma, Sarah. That's,
you were close.
Yeah. I hope she doesn't listen. At least this far in. And so I don't know how it got started, but like she said something about Friends, and then I quietly said to myself, Friends isn't good. And Jared was like, oh, what? What do you mean Friends isn't good?
Yeah, Friends is great.
No.
So it's me, Chris, and Todd versus Jared in this argument.
We all know that's not going to be a very good argument, but in my opinion, Friends is very good.
Okay. Here's my analysis on Friends. So Chandler is the only good character.
I would agree.
I love his dry humor. I love Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
Joey is annoying. He's an idiot. And I don't like stupid humor.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I don't like just, like, mindless stupid humor.
Okay.
Ross is whiny. He's one of my fraternity brothers, though. So, Rodell.
David Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer. He's whiny, and I don't like that. Phoebe might be all right. I don't mind Phoebe as a character. I think she has some good moments. But then... Jennifer Aniston's character, Rachel.
There you go.
I don't like the whole will they won't they with Ross and Rachel. Yeah. I think that's the only thing that had the franchise going for sure. as long as it did.
Yeah.
And then Courtney Cox's character, whose name is eluding me,
Monica.
There you go. Probably the most annoying character in the show.
Really?
Yeah. I do not like Monica
more
at all.
More than Phoebe.
I told you I don't mind Phoebe. Phoebe is like she toes the line of like that really stupid humor that Joey has. But
I think who's the dumb humor guy? Joey. I think Joey's my least favorite character.
Joey is up there. I mean, it's either Joey or
Monica.
I forgot her name again. That's how much I don't like her.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So my reason, no, not yet. My reason for not liking the show is that the characters are like all very very basic stereotypes. Like.
It's what makes the show.
Stereotypical characters is what
yes
make a show
yes,
good.
In this case, Friends.
No, and that, like, I don't know, like. It's like Chris said, like Joey's dumb, Phoebe's a hippie, like Rachel's like the spoiled like daddy's little girl, Ross is like a very whiny like smart like nerdy guy, and then Matthew Perry, what's his name?
Chandler,
like he has the like. He is the only redeemable character of the show, but again, he's very, like, you know what you're getting from all of these characters. Like, they don't do anything out of the ordinary, like, and, like, so the reason people love Seinfeld is because it's a show about nothing. Like, there's no connection between every episode. Like, you could just watch one episode, and there's no connection to any other episode for the most part. And, like, Friends, that's why people love Friends, because like they have these character like plot lines and storylines and like relationships that draw the viewers in, and like, you know, you kind of grow to love them like as their own relationships grow. But like, I just don't care. I don't care about Chandler. I don't care about Rachel and Ross. Like, it's just not interesting to me.
Okay.
I want to hear what the pros of Friends are.
The pros, it's very comedic. I mean, apparently you don't like the stupid humor, but I do like it. I think that it's something you have to binge watch.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I would not say that this has been a binge-worthy show.
No. Ooh. I think it's something that you could, I don't know. It's like an old friend. to go back and watch it, you just
the thing that I have about Friends is it's like one of those, it's like a Saturday like midday or like a Sunday midday, if it comes on the TV and like there's really nothing else on, I'm not going to turn it off, but it's kind of like a background piece.
Yeah, that's what
I'm not invested into it.
Yeah, that's what my girlfriend, like, she watched it and it was always something that she said that she just had on in the background, like while she did her homework or like did whatever, and like didn't really pay attention to it, but like it was just there as like background noise.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see it. I think it's a very like niche, like either you really like it or you really don't. I don't think there's an in between. Like
polarizing is how we would describe that.
Really? I don't think academics. Friends is that polarizing. You don't like, think? I don't like hate Friends. I just like I don't get the love for it.
Okay.
And the reason like they're apparently taking Friends off Netflix.
Big uproar
in the beginning of January. It was only on Netflix for 2-ish years, I want to say.
Wasn't on for that long.
Yeah, like there was a big movement to get it on there because so many people love it for whatever reason. And so they finally got it on there, and now after however many years it's coming off.
They've been doing like that. I mean, they took off It's Always Sunny, which is like one of my personal favorite like comedy shows like that.
I believe that's on Hulu now.
It is. Yeah. I mean, they've been moving everything to Hulu, which is annoying because there's ads.
Yeah.
That's the bad part.
And then my like last reason that I don't like this show is that like, so the titles, it's kind of like two-parter. The titles of each episode where it says the one where blah, 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 blah happens. Like, I just think it's like so cheesy. And then also like the show as a whole is just very, very, very cheesy. Like, it's very cliche. Like, it's not interesting to me, you know?
I get that. Yeah, especially the first episode where Rachel's, like, the runaway bride.
Yeah, like...
I can see that point.
Again, it's, like, very, very, like, stereotypical kind of, you know, show. And then another one, I was just, like, looking up online, like, reasons that Friends isn't good. And most of them were just, like, you know... people not enjoying it for whatever reason, you know, not very warranted reasons. But this one is about like the lack of diversity in Friends. It, like, if you watch Friends again, like, it's just all white people. There's no, like, there's no
also,
other race.
I have one big qual with Friends. Paul Rudd was on the show.
He was.
I hate Paul Rudd. Not a fan Paul of Rudd is the not worst actor. I hate him so much. Ant-Man is garbage.
What are you saying about
Ant-Man
now?
Ant-Man? Ant-Man's really good.
Paul Rudd always plays the same exact character in every like show, movie,
oh, he 100%
whatever he's in,
does.
And it is so annoying as a character. He's like another one of those like idiot characters where like you just kind of like plug him in and he's like, "Oh, I'm here. I'm doing something." And he acts like surprised whenever he's acting. Like, you know what's going on, Paul. Stop lying. Paul Rudd rant. I'm going to blow a gasket.
We'll have to talk about that again at some point because that's an interesting topic. I, for one, love Paul Rudd.
Oh, he's garbage.
Solely because of Ant-Man. I love Ant-Man. So I think it's a really interesting character. But yeah, going back to like the diversity thing, like, do you know how many people live in New York? A lot of people.
Yeah, when you first said that's what popped in my mind.
You know how diverse New York is as a city?
It varies. It's probably
it's one of the most diverse. Yeah, and this show is about six white people. And all, like, I've watched a decent amount of Friends. I'm, like, trying to think through, like, the characters in the show that aren't just straight white people, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like, and obviously it's a different... Friends was, what, the 90s?
Yeah,
so, like,
say it's,
that was before...
That was before, like, the dawn of, like, Will and Grace, where you could, like, actually get into, like, the really, like, touchy situations.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's our debate about Friends. We'll have to talk about this again at some point. Uh-huh. Maybe get someone to join Jared's side, because it kind of ganged up on him here.
Yeah, overwhelmed.
Yeah. So, next week, actually, this kind of popped into my head that I wanted to do this. So, I think it was... Over the weekend was, or maybe it was Friday, this past Friday, was the 16th anniversary of the Disney movie Treasure Planet. And that's probably, that's easily top three Disney movies for me. Chris is, looking shocked here. But I personally love that movie. And so I wanted to talk about it. And then there's also a short, like 30-ish minute documentary on YouTube called Treasure Planet, Disney's Biggest Mistake. It's by Bread's World. Bread's Word, sorry. Came out in 2017, but the movie itself is from the early 2000s. So we're going to watch that movie, and then we're also all going to watch the documentary and kind of discuss it. The documentary talks about, like, why the movie was set up to fail, like, by the Disney executives, and then also, like, why the movie is actually really, really good when you look into it. And again, like I said, it's one of my personal favorites.
It is also one of
mine. And it's a movie that often gets overlooked in the whole Disney conversation. It's one that, you know, going back to the live action thing, I think it'd be interesting to see them remake it in live action, but, you know, I'm not sure.
I'm going to talk about that next week. That's a discussion for next week, I believe.
But. Yeah. But then that's with what we're doing next week. And then the last thing that, you know, we had to talk about, Jared kind of talked about it, jumped the gun a little bit earlier in the show.
What can I say?
Yeah. And that is about SpongeBob. Steven Hillenburg, the creator of the mega hit Nickelodeon cartoon series, SpongeBob SquarePants, died on Monday. He was 57. The cause of his death was ALS, which Hillenburg revealed he had been diagnosed with in March of last year. A statement from Nickelodeon reads as followed. We are incredibly saddened by the news that Steven Hillenburg has passed away following a battle with ALS. He was a beloved friend and longtime creative partner to everyone at Nickelodeon, and our hearts go out to his entire family. Steve imbued SpongeBob SquarePants with a unique sense of humor and innocence that has brought joy to generations of kids and families everywhere. His utterly original characters and the world of Bikini Bottom will stand as long as a reminder of the value of optimism, friendship, and limitless power of imagination. So I just kind of wanted to mention that you guys all watch this show. I'm making that as a statement. I'm not asking.
No, of course. Because I will judge you if you have not watched SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah.
I have watched SpongeBob, yes.
Todd?
Yep.
So I just want to, like, get your thoughts on just the show as a whole, just to kind of, you know, thank the creator.
I'm definitely going to say that the first three, maybe four seasons are the best ones.
I maybe go up to the fifth.
After that, they kind of, they're stupid, kind of repetitive. But okay.
After the movie, I feel like they started to do a lot of singing in it, and I think that took away. It was just kind of different than what we were used to.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. The show was, it's like they said, it was very, like, original and creative. Obviously, kids' shows are always, like, kind of set in different universes or, like, different worlds, but this is one that just kind of, like, resonated with a lot of children, I think. It was very, like, genuine humor, I think, and it's something that, you know, if you're, like, anywhere from the age of, like, 10 to 30 and you haven't seen at least 5 episodes of SpongeBob, you just don't own a TV. Like, there's no way you can...
It is always on.
...just, like, be in America and, like, have not seen this show. Like, you've all seen... Like, it has a very, very far reach. Like, everyone knows, you know, a little bit about SpongeBob. And that's just kind of a testament to, like, you know, obviously how long the show's been running and just, you know, how good of a show it is. But yeah, this is a show that I've always loved. I think it's a show that kind of spans generations. You know, there's a lot of older people that watch it, and then, you know, little kids today are also watching it because it's still on Nickelodeon. So,
and so many references you can make.
Yeah, it's one of those shows too. Like, I'm trying, like The Office. People make Office references, Simpsons references, Family Guy, but like SpongeBob is definitely up there too. And that kind of, like, off topic a little bit, it's related to memes. Like, you see a SpongeBob meme become popular, like, every other month. And, like, that's just because so many people have watched this show and, like, just, you know, are pulling out images from the show and making it into something, you know, immensely popular. But any last thoughts on SpongeBob?
I think it's just, it's one of those shows that's defined our generation, so to see the creator of it pass is obviously a very sad moment. Obviously, ALS is another huge issue as well. It's like kind of like taking a lot of people, but I don't know. It's an emotional time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave with this. Heroes get remembered, but legends they never die.
Yeah. There's a petition out now, for Sweet Victory from like the SpongeBob Bubble Dome episode to be played during the Super Bowl, and it has like thousands and thousands of signatures.
Yeah, isn't it supposed to be Maroon 5 as of right now?
Oh my god. Maroon 5.
Yeah, okay. I know we don't talk about music per my request, but I saw Maroon 5 in concert. Very good.
I'll take your word for it.
Should go see him.
Did you actually see them in person or did you watch a YouTube video?
No, he went to a concert. I went to a concert.
I went to the concert.
Oh, we've gotten too off topic here. So, you know, thank you again to Steven for creating, you know, such an amazing show. Everyone this generation is thankful. And then again, next week we're going to be talking about Treasure Planet. So if you're tuning in, try to watch that movie. Try to watch the documentary that I mentioned. And thank you again for listening. This has been David.
Todd. Jared.
Chris.
Yep, thank you for getting real with us. We'll see you next week, hopefully during finals. Thank you.
Love you.